You're listening to the Self-Made is a Myth, Make a Difference Together show with your host, Coach Tim Campsall, where we talk with successful business owners to hear the stories of their journeys in building their successful businesses. And more importantly, we recognize the folks who help them excel because we know that achieving business success is not something we can do on our own.
Hello, everyone. This is Coach Tim Campsall, and I'm excited to have a fellow business owner from Indiana with us today. Something unique about my guest is that before starting his business, he was a church planter. In his downtime, he enjoys taking trips with his wife and being with his children. And the thing he's most proud of is being a faithful father, husband, and follower of Jesus. It's my pleasure to welcome Courtney to the show today. Hello, Courtney.
Hey, Tim. Good to be on here.
Hey, well, let's start with having you introduce yourself. Tell us your full name and a little bit about your personal story, like where you were born and live and about your family.
Sure. Full name, Courtney Arthur Zahn is my full name. I was born in northern Indiana in the area called the Region. And so moved to central Indiana when I was about 13 with my mom and two sisters. And then when I graduated high school, kind of bounced around on different jobs here and there. Then I ended up going to Bible college for 2 years and then pursued pastoral ministry. While I was doing that, had kind of a handful of dead-end jobs after another, and then pursued church planting when I was in my late 20s, did that for a couple years. And then through a series of events, decided to start my own business in 2011.
Fantastic. And in your intro, I talked about your family. Tell us about them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been married to my wife for 22 years, I believe. She was 19, I was 20, kind of high school sweethearts. Yeah. And then we have four kids. Her name is Faith, and then four kids, Bristol, Quinn, Shepherd, and Story. Shepherd and Story are 9-year-old twins. Quinn is my 11-year-old daughter, and then Bristol is my 13-year-old boy.
Fantastic. And you... Yeah. You enjoy spending time with them, obviously, but what's your go-to? What's the thing that the family all enjoys doing together?
Yeah. So we like traveling. So we've been blessed to be able to go out to Colorado quite a bit and do, at different times we find ourselves doing like extreme biking. So I grew up BMX racing. So we do some mountain biking, dirt jumping. We do a lot less of that now. My kids have kind of moved into basketball and soccer and whatnot, but we still find ourselves kind of being fairly adventurous. So things like that.
Very good. Hey, Courtney, is there a funny story that your family likes to tell about you that you'd be willing to share with us today?
I mean, a funny story. I don't know. Funny story about myself. I don't know. My kids maybe think I'm a little bit reckless at times. So, you know, a couple of years ago, we were in North Carolina and I was hitting some larger size dirt jumps with my son and shattered my elbow and walked off the dirt jump course with a brace around my neck. And my kids thought I had broke my neck and my wife thought I was dead. And so I may have chased a moose and a bear in Colorado once or twice in a Jeep. So they like telling those stories.
Nice. That's why they're sticking to basketball now, right? Instead of the BMX.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Courtney, tell us, how did the business come about and at what point did you have the confidence you could run your own business?
So a couple of years before I started my business, like I said, I was church planting at that time. I had a full-time job working for a company that did similar to what I do now. So we were a masonry restoration company. I was a low-level project supervisor. And while I was doing that, I was still church planning and involved in ministry. And my wife said at one point in time, she said, "Hey, I think you should start your own business." And I'm like, absolutely not. I had no interest. I'm a pretty faithful guy and was really happy with what I did and wasn't really interested in starting a business. This was just kind of an interim thing until I would be able to be a full-time pastor with the church that I was planning. And a series of events happened. One thing specifically, it says in First Timothy, I believe, that if a man can't pastor his own household, how can he pastor the household of God? And that verse really convicted me. And I just realized that at that season of my life, I just wasn't in a position where I should be trying to lead a congregation. And so at that time, I stepped away from church planning, actually started being a part-time youth pastor at the church that we started attending. And during that time, I had to figure out what my next step was. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have like any kind of formal education. I didn't have a skill that I could rely on. With the exception is I had a lot of, I tell people that hypothetically, I'm a really good brick mason. And so I had seen a lot of masonry restoration work, seen a lot of fireplace work. I wasn't the guy doing it, but I had seen the way it played itself out. Mm. And so I felt like that was the only kind of thing that I could land on. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs start because there's a problem that they see and they think that they can solve it. And selfishly, my problem was that I needed a job. I needed to figure out how I was going to provide for my family. So I was 29, 30 at that time. We had our first son on the way. And I had to figure out how to make more than 14 bucks an hour, which is where I was at. So at that time, I part-time youth pastor, and then I worked at the Fresh Market stacking fruit. And then I decided to start my business. And basically, once I went on my first sales appointment with my business, I never stopped. And after 6 months, the counsel given to me is that it seems like God is using you in business. And I think you should pursue that instead of pursuing kind of formal ministry. And so I decided to do that. 12 years later, I'm still doing it.
That's awesome. What a great story. So yeah. Tell us more about the company. What's the name? What do you guys do? How do you help people?
Yeah. So we've had a couple reiterations of our name. It started out as Chimney and Masonry Solutions, and then Masonry Outfitters, then Chimney and Masonry Outfitters. And now we're presently Brick and Ember Outfitters. And so we did a brand change a couple of years ago for various reasons, but Brick and Ember Outfitters, we're a fireplace, chimney and masonry company. A lot of what we do is in the residential space, but we do some commercial work. And so if a customer has a fireplace that they want to service, we can sweep it. We can service a gas unit. And then we also take care of the functionality of the fireplace, making sure that it's lined properly, and then all the masonry on the exterior. So we can work with anything pre-existing, or we can build something new. And then we do a lot of masonry work on the exterior of a home. So tuck pointing, brick replacement. It's not overly complicated, overly fancy. I suppose some of our fireplace remodels can get pretty elaborate when you're building a structure, putting a different type of brick or stone veneer, and then running gas lines and different fireplace units and inventing it properly. But that's primarily what we do.
Fantastic. So, Courtney, share a story where someone pushed you or inspired you that you could do it, even though maybe you didn't think that you could, and the impact that person had on you.
Well, my wife was extremely confident in that I could do something. I'm pretty resilient as far as overcoming challenges. And so, you know, she initially said I should, and then I said, no, I'm not interested. And then I decided to. So she's always been really supportive. And for me to start a business, we had no money in the bank. I remember taking any money we had to buy a $250 ladder. My first sales appointment was in my wife's 1997 Honda minivan. You know, that's not very impressive when you pull up to a customer's house, but that's how we started. We eventually had to take out a loan for, you know, $9,000 to buy a truck. And I did that. And so I would say she's been the one that's been the most supportive.
Yeah, that's
fantastic. I would also say just, people that have come to work for me. So I had a handful of friends and family that were willing to work with me. And so for them to do that was a vote of confidence.
Yeah.
And so there was some guys that I had worked with previously that decided to join me in my endeavor. So that was one of the main things. And then, I had a bank friend that supported me early on and gave me some of the loans that I needed. And so that was super beneficial. That was Elliot at Citizen State Bank. So they're a local bank in Indianapolis. So a lot of confidence there, which I appreciated. I felt like I've never had a whole lot of people challenge me on whether I should do what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. People have always been very, very encouraging, and seeing that I had the abilities to do what I was doing. So they just kind of, people oftentimes encourage me in that.
That's fantastic. Having that support group and that encouragement group is a big deal, especially when you're starting out from nothing to be able to know that all these people believe in you. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So
Corey, yeah, it is.
What's been the biggest learning that you've had as a business owner?
Well, let's see here. You know, when I started a business, I didn't think I was an entrepreneur. I didn't think I was a business owner. So when I thought about the things that I had done in my 20s, or this who I was like when I was in high school, if I look back on it, I realized that I was somewhat of a leader, found myself kind of taking initiative and people kind of following the things that I was doing, being somewhat influential, never thinking of myself as a leader or an influential person. But being in youth ministry, I was starting things, leading people, communicating to people in various ways. And so not until I started a business then that I started applying those things, just because I had to. Didn't realize that I was actually fairly good at sales, but partially thanks to Aaron Prickle at Lucian. He helped us a lot in our formal training. But good with people, good with sales, and then had an eye for different ways to market ourselves to get in front of people, as well as an eye for branding. Those were things that didn't realize it at the time, but as you start in, you know, start working within different aspects of a business, marketing, sales, branding, those all came fairly natural to me early on, primarily because I found myself wanting to set ourselves apart from other people in our industry. Yeah. And there was a time where the construction industry wasn't overly attractive in the way that it presented itself online or carried itself in a sales appointment. I would say the construction industry as a whole has done better. But I would say 12 years ago, they didn't do a great job at branding themselves on their trucks or having a website that was attractive to a customer. Mm. So those are things that I'm the kind of person that if people are doing it this way, I want to do it the opposite way. I feel like I can do it better. And that hasn't always proven to be true. There's plenty of failure. But in the area of branding and marketing and in sales, I would say that we've done that pretty well.
Fantastic. So we know that, and you've alluded to this already a little bit, we know that business success doesn't happen in isolation. So tell us about one of the biggest challenges that you've had in growing the business, and maybe a fellow business owner or a colleague who helped you through that.
Let's see here. So I always knew that there's always people that most definitely are smarter than me. Mm. And my goal had always been to kind of work myself out of a job. My goal had always was the mindset of, I'm not the smartest guy at the table. Surely there's people better than me. Mm. And so I always tried really hard to surround myself with people that were better than me. Now, here's the problem. I'm not really good at vetting those people. I have a strong belief in people. I believe anybody can become something. Mm. And I don't know that that's always true. Primarily, some people are geared towards certain things. And because I'm fairly influential and when I talk to people, I can motivate people to capture the vision that I have for our company or for them specifically. And then they believe they can do something, but they don't actually have the skill set. And then when they have to gain the skill set, they're not overly motivated to do that, to become what I suggested they could.
Yeah.
And so I found myself doing a good job of getting out of the way, putting other people in charge, but not really vetting those people of being the caliber of individuals that I needed. Mm. And so one guy that really helped me kind of see how I can fix that is Mike Hudson. He's an implementer for EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System. And so they have one part that's, is called GWC, Get It, Want It, and Capacity. And it's just a process of lining everybody up with what is your values, and then do they fit your values? And then are they capable of, do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have capacity to do it? Yeah. And whether you like the person, it's just a more of a factual way of vetting people to do what you need them to do.
Yeah.
And I still struggle with that, to be honest. So I try to remove myself. I try to, we use Lucian for some assessments when we hire people. Yeah. We use the EOS process, which really helps. It gets me out of the way and says, Courtney, your intuition is not always right, because you just tend to, your intuition says anybody and everybody can do it.
Yeah.
It that's not true. So this helps kind of get me out of the way, and uses some tools that people have brought my way to help out with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so key. There's a term out there that has been incorrectly used, micromanagement. And the problem with the term micromanagement is now nobody wants to manage because we don't want to be micromanagers. So we all have, or many of us have pulled back and said, okay, well, I'm just going to be a leader. I'm going to inspire and motivate people. And then, and some folks, like you were just describing, are internal optimists. So we're like, hey, if I paint the right picture and the vision and I inspire and motivate people, they're going to, you know, grow into their role and be awesome. And, you know, the reality is that most people need to be managed to results, and some people need to be micromanaged until they're able to deliver results awesomely. And so, yeah, if it's not in your hard coding to be able to, you know, to want to get into the weeds and really, right, really, you know, help people, right, to figure those things out and discern whether they can do the job or not. I love what you're saying. Hey, let me find, you know, somebody else on the team or a process that will help, you know, pare down my optimism and make sure we're evaluating people on what they're actually going to be able to perform versus what I see their capability or potential.
Yeah. One thing that you'll never hear me talk about as far as my strong suit is operations, yeah, or finances. Yeah. You'll never hear me use the word SOP in a good way, right? Yeah. In my opinion, SOP is a four-letter word. Okay. Yeah. I'm just not great at it, and I fought against it for quite some time. I just felt like we could all kind of live in utopia and have this harmonious thing, and it just doesn't work that way.
Yep.
And so that's been a very challenging piece for me. That's the operations of a business. So being that I was the guy that started it and then had done these different roles and for a previous company, I was very competent in doing the work as far as from a management standpoint, but to manage people that are doing the work and then having to build infrastructure to manage them.
Yes.
I fail at it often. And that's, I honestly failed for way too long.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kept on, I could read another book. I could listen to another podcast and I would get it. But at the end of the day, I just hate it.
Yeah.
I hate managing. I hate micromanaging. And so what do? I just, I cast a bigger and greater vision thinking that that will fix all the operational problems.
Yeah.
And it just never does.
Yeah. So and this is common for people who have started their own business. I think the EOS terminology is visionaries, right? A very common thing to happen where the visionary is really good at ideating and motivating and inspiring, but they can't land the plane. Right? And so, right. So they need to hire somebody into that operations role who is awesome at detail and, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's and can translate what the visionary is saying into, okay, what's the actual 90-day plan? And how does this, you know, who's going to do what and by when, and I'm going to hold them accountable so that you can stay in that, you know, leadership and inspiration role, and the other person can stay more in the operations management role, and together, right, you're the yin and yang to have an awesome business.
Correct. I had a friend who used to work with me, Josh, and he said, Courtney, working for you is kind of like building a plane and pushing it off the cliff before, you know, before it's built, and then hoping for the best. And I would say that's a fair statement, you know. So we're working really hard to do more building before we kind of launch, you know, into new things.
I love that. That's a great analogy. Yeah. Hey, Courtney, I'm going to sort of put you on the spot here in a good way. If I was to ask you to pick three people in your business owner journey that you're most grateful for them being there to help with the business's growth? Who are those three people and how'd they help you?
Three people. Three people. One is Aaron Prickle. I talked about him. I'll bring his name up every time if I'm going to talk about what got us to certain growth points in our business. And so I've been working with Aaron for about 6+ years, and he helped us kind of put a framework around how we sell, but more so why. Not just how, not just the tactical ways of what we do, but the mindset behind it. And that's been super helpful. And that's the only process that I've been able to lock into and that our company has done faithfully from day one of working with Aaron. Now, when I say faithfully, I mean, we have not shifted from that. Mm. It's a constant battle to always follow a process,
sure,
but we've not stopped from pursuing that.
Yeah.
So Aaron has been a huge benefit to our team. And I think most everybody from our team that works with him would be the first name that comes out of their mouth.
Awesome. Yeah.
I mentioned Mike Hudson as well. Mike helped us implement EOS, which has been another one of those frameworks that, I think about it this way. My pastor says often, he says, blessed is the man who restarts family devotions all the time. So it's like, there's these things in your life that you always think you should be doing. And it's like, if we could just be honest, we're constantly restarting good things that we know we should do. And, we all feel bad about it, but it's the truth, right? We all have to get back on that workout program, right? We all have to get back on that diet or whatever it is. But we're always getting back on it, which is better than not. And so EOS is one of those things that we're constantly striving to implement more and to hold to it more. And Mike, he helped us for a couple of years and walked alongside us in that. And that's been a huge piece. And then I would say one other guy is David Dickinson. He's a guy that he worked with me. He was one of my first employees. He was actually moved here with me from New Mexico for our church plant. And then he decided to work with me as well. And he worked with me for a handful of years. Now he's his own business owner, doing a great job. But I would say he was faithful. Mm. He was committed, but he also was willing to challenge me.
Yeah.
And he became a really good salesman. And we refer back to him often in our sales team, all knows him. And so we'll talk sales together as well. And so he really helped the company grow because he became a great salesman, and which helped the company grow. And by default, then us around him were challenged to become better as well. So I'd say he's one of those guys.
I love it. So I love the diversity of the different people that you referenced, and some internal, some external, just a good well-rounded group of support to help you to get to where you're at. So let's talk about the future, Courtney. As you think about the next 1 to 3 years, what's your number one priority or challenge that you see in achieving your goals?
Well, I used to, earlier on in business, having vision and big goals, some people call it BHAG.
Yeah,
it was very easy for me. And I would say, to be honest, business really challenges, at times it challenges the hopeful big ideas that you have. You realize that it's harder to get to where you want to go. Mm. And you have these markers. It's like, oh, if you can get past year 5, then you've arrived. Or if you can get past year 10, then, you've arrived. And you see these markers, or you have these dollar amounts that if you could achieve that.
Yeah.
And then you realize for every dollar amount that you achieve, there's like another level of operational complexity that's also been added to it that makes the money less profitable, and so you got to do this one thing, and then you realize how hard it is to get there. And so what we've really been focused on the last year or two is we've constantly been at this ceiling and really been struggling how to break through it. And the typical method of selling our way out of it, that doesn't seem to be good enough. Or having a greater and bigger vision isn't good enough. I would say there's no one silver bullet, or there's not even a couple. There's a handful of BBs, you know, that need to be dealt with, that will fix the greater problem. And sometimes we're, you know, we started paying our team off of gross profit. And so we've changed the way our pay structure is a little bit. We started scrutinizing things like material costs, and then applying some lean principles to like how efficiently we get the material from point A to point B.
Yes.
You know, so we're doing little things like that. We found that there's a lot of value in having things shipped to us versus going and getting a lot of material. Mm. So those are some changes.
Yeah.
And brought on a partner, Jamie, who's really helping with the operational piece in of the business. So that's a key component of fixing a lot of these challenges that we have.
Yeah.
So when you say like, what's the next 1 to 3 years, I'm really satisfied with what does it look like not to just be big, but to be healthy.
Mm.
And if out of health,
yes,
we can become bigger, I'm happy with that.
Yes.
But I don't need it either.
Yeah.
Earlier on, the first, I don't know, 5 to 8 years, big was the thing that I identified with. And the more trucks, the more exposure, the bigger the revenue number, the better I felt as a person.
Yeah.
And that's tiring, to be honest. I don't know that me as a person has the bandwidth to just continue down that path. And really what I would love to be is to be a lot deeper of a company.
Yeah.
With a lot better bottom line.
Yes.
Versus top line. And so that's what we're working on right now. You know, but as far as goals, like, you know, we have some revenue goals that would say if we had these revenue goals, then we'd also know that those goals would be because there was certain health. And so those are the rocks that we have and the things that we're constantly working on.
I love it. The things you're sharing is very common with successful businesses or growing businesses. Typically what happens is, you know, in the first few years, the business is, you know, the owner's figuring things out and connecting dots and having some ahas, and then they'll have a period of growth. And then typically the business will then plateau. And
yeah.
But unbeknownst to the owner, what's happened is the business has outgrown the owner's capacity, right? So really what's happened is there's a significant growth, and then it grows a little above the owner's capacity, and then a little below, and then above and below. But basically, right, it's flattened out. And the idea is, you know, what got you here won't get you there. And so the next phase is, all right, how do I now create a business that has people and processes to run the business without me, so that I've set it up to be able to scale? And that comes down to what you're saying about health, right? Because it's now all about profit and being able to reinvest the profits back into systems and processes and procedures and team, right? To be able to set up this well-oiled machine that can run without the owner. So everything that you're talking about is the natural next phase, you know, of a growing, you know, successful business, that it's now, okay, we've got to change what the priorities are and what the focus is in order to now make this a, you know, a sustainable and healthy growing business. So congrats.
Yeah, on absolutely
getting to that phase and having that awareness. That's awesome.
Well, we've been there for a little while, so we're hoping to get over the hump or break through the ceiling, you know?
Yeah. Hey, last question here. Jim Rohn, an amazing business guru. One of his quotes is, "We become the average of the five people that we spend the most time with." Though, as you think about that quote, what advice would you have for other business owners that are listening to this and are trying to do it on their own?
What advice? You know what? I've always been a fairly self-aware person. But I've also realized that in how much there's so much that I'm not aware of either. It takes some time. There's lots of wisdom that people that have been there and done that and been further along, the advice that they gave me. Mm-hmm. And if I could be honest, I just thought that I'm just going to keep on doing what I do. It's working good enough. We're going to keep on working the process and it'll work out. Oftentimes my eyes were bigger than my appetite. So I had it's what helped us grow. I had a big vision and I loved seeing our name out there. I loved big numbers. I loved the pats on the back when people saw more of our trucks around town. But it really blinded me to the things that we're constantly struggling with. Mm. It made me blind to the things that we're actually struggling with. So if you're a younger person, or if you've been doing something for a couple of years, you're just not as good as you think. And you don't know it all. And you may have read a lot of books, but there's a lot of blind spots, and you ought to find a handful of people that are a few years ahead of you. And if they say something, you ought to do it.
Yeah.
And you'll find a ton of reasons as to why you know more than them.
Right.
And here's what you'll do is you'll be a good leader and a good business owner by way of asking the right questions with no intent of following through with it. Mm-hmm. Because you know more. But you tell yourself that you're doing the right thing because you're being humble and you're asking and you're talking and you feel good about that. And you give people lip service by saying, "Oh, thank you. That's good." And then you don't actually apply any of it. Mm-hmm. That's been my story.
Yeah.
And if in hindsight, I could have done it different, whether we would have been a smaller company at this point, I don't know, but no doubt we would have been a healthier and more profitable company at this point. And the ceiling that we experience right now probably would have been dealt with a handful of years ago. And we would have more growth actually at this point. Yeah. I couldn't see it back then.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I couldn't see it.
I thank you for being humble and sharing that you couldn't see it. I know in my own experience, I've had a coach since I started, and it's what I do for a living is coach other business owners on best practices. But every week my coach points something out to me, right, that I've missed or I'm not doing as well as I could because I can't see it for myself because I'm too close to my own business. It's a natural, normal thing to get tunnel visioned on certain aspects of the business and not pay attention to other aspects or think that we know better. And yeah, I appreciate you sharing and sharing your heart and those who are listening are, hopefully you're internalizing that and thinking about, how does that apply to your business?
Yeah.
Courtney, sounds like you've been blessed with some incredible people on your journey. If they were all on the show here today, what would you want to say to them?
Well, I would say thanks for always being encouraging to me. A lot of people have been, very supportive, and they've been generous. There's been a handful of people where I've been in a situation where I couldn't afford to do certain things, or I couldn't give what I wanted, mm-hmm. or I was asking more than what maybe I should. And I felt like they were always willing to help. They were always willing to give more than what the check that I was writing them suggested. And that means a lot, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you can say a lot of nice things to people, but when the things that they're saying also impacts the money in their pocket and in a negative way, that means a lot. And so there's been those guys have done that for me at various times. So I appreciate that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Courtney. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Self-Made is a Myth show. Please help spread this movement by liking and subscribing to our show and following us on Facebook and LinkedIn. To join our movement, go to BeMadTogether.com. Okay, folks, that's a wrap. Please pay it forward and be sure to tune in next time to the Self-Made is a Myth podcast.